Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby naked hat. Rise the cop till you hit the spot. Tell my baby naked hat.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee.
Makes me laugh every time. Yeah, so we started the show out with all three of us here, and we calmly entered the room, so something must be amiss. Welcome to Naked Selma's Riff on This for a Wednesday night, August
29th. Yep.
29th, mm-hmm. 2007. And this is sort of a special show because we're going to be winding down the format today and launching a new one next week. So before we introduce all those factors, let's go around the horn because Dr. Jeb has scantily a little time to spend with us this evening as his family is in full turmoil. So let's go right to Dr. Jeb and get the rundown.
No, everything's good. I'm just I was going to give my tip of the week early tonight and say for all of you families out there, if it can all possible, not to plan a twin's birth for the late August, early September weather.
Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, pregnancy's it has its own flavor to it. But being pregnant in the summer with four other kids, there's got to be some kind of merit badge for that.
Yeah, and twins to boot. It's it is unbelievable. Yeah. But she's a rock, man. She's doing great. So. The real tip of the week is for you all to go thematically around the horn and just re-listen to the shows, re-look at the blog, and get yourself primed up and ready for your emotional makeover that is coming to you soon.
Oh, he just said the buzzword. Yeah, we got to get going on that. All right, so that's pretty much what we're going to be talking about this hour is we're going to look at the last 11 weeks of shows, take it back through the thematic summer, where we started, where we ended up, and give you guys an idea of how the show has evolved since we kind of popped on the air sometime in May. I think we were on there right around the end of May. We were doing the shows in Manhattanville, and then we started doing these, and we were fighting with the Hell Life Help for a while there at Blog Talk, and we sort of wrestled ourselves on the air. And I want to thank everyone for archiving the show. We've gotten a lot more listeners lately. We thank you for that. We'd love to have you guys, here with us. On the air, because we're going to start doing a lot more interactive stuff beginning next week. So if you like the show, you listen to the show, and you're interested in it, by all means, call in, and let me see if I can do two things at once, which I never can.
There is one catch here, though. We can only do interactive things if we have somebody to interact with.
Yes.
Besides ourselves.
Yeah, we need you guys to call. I mean, we interact with each other.
Among ourselves.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, we talk to ourselves every week, but, that's about all the interaction we could sustain with the three of us, but...
Yeah, we actually doubled the amount of people who listened this week. Doubled.
Right on.
Amazing.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
You guys
got back
on the link,
I think word's getting out.
On the ramp side, maybe. Yeah. If you haven't heard, Professor Val added a new portal for everyone to enjoy, which is flawedspouse.com. That's, and you can go up there and just join the ranters and... weigh in, and there's some contact there with what we're doing up here on the Blog Talk side. So maybe the people over there are saying, hey, if they gave us this, maybe they'll give us something else to rant at. And we really enjoy ranting because it does give people the permission that the society doesn't give you to sort of let some of this tension out and express yourselves fully. I don't know how many of you out there feel censored by the world and not able to really vent your spleen, as it were, fully, because I tell you what, if I started now, I wouldn't stop until next Arbor Day.
Yep.
So I know what it's like when you're facing those things and you have to just sort of, grin and smile and keep going. And we're going to get into that a little bit if we start talking about what we're going to be shifting the show's focus on.
Arbor Day.
Beginning
in
September.
Arbor Day.
Yeah, Arbor Day. There was, I think there might have been a Charlie Brown special for that. The last tree, the great pumpkin. I don't know. They had an Arbor Day. As well as underrated holidays. What is it? Is it June? I don't even know. So let's see if we get a couple of callers tonight. I'd like to see that happen. Phone number down here is 646 478 4847, and we'll take any question you got about anything we did over the summer months and anything you got on your minds tonight as we end the summer. And this is sort of like when you go back to school and they go, you know, well, tell us what you did all summer. We want to know how your summer went, because the Somatic Summer, which sort of came to a crescendo on Tuesday night with the big lunar eclipse, was a tough summer. Where there was a lot of things that that happened, the way that the moon was lining up with the somas out there, and the domains were really bopping us around. So we're going to go back through and review how we got through it, and what different angles we took at different junctures of the summer, so that we gave all sides sort of equal access to you, and see what the impact was. We hope that we're helping you out there, because the whole point is that pop culture, as it were, whatever's sitting there in the inbox there in Yahoo or whatever's popping up on your RSS feed, it's conditioning you to respond in certain ways and to sort of break you out of your relationship with your immediate surroundings and put you into this what's called the data sphere, with this kind of media bubble we're in. And, you know, you follow these stories, and sometimes you get wrapped up in them almost like mini soap operas. I mean, there's so many. There's this thing with the senator in the airport the other day.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
was that the thing where he was reaching under the thing?
Yeah. He's reaching under the store with his iPod on.
He said he had a wide stance.
Yeah, and there was an undercover. The fact that there's undercover cops hanging out in the Minneapolis airport bathrooms trying to nail people for lewd conduct tells me that, you know, there's not enough crime in Minnesota. We have to just go to Minnesota just to start more crime, because if that's where they're spending their resources, I would put that under the lame category. And the fact that this guy goes, no, it's okay, I'm a senator. I mean, you know, it's going to be like, this guy just hit the lottery, whoever arrested him. And they love to nail people for that. Meanwhile, Lindsay Lohan, she drives...
Well, then the thing was, he went ahead and he pled guilty.
Yeah.
And then if he pled guilty,
thinking it would go away.
Then he recanted it and said, no, I was reaching for a piece of paper off the ground. I have a wide stance.
I mean,
yeah,
you
was on the other side. He's playing footsie with the guy next door.
Right, but I'm saying, these are the things that creep into your radar during the day, because you hear them on the way to work on the radio, or there's a little funny story, you know, before you go out the door on the Today Show. And it's like you get tagged with so much sort of just kind of mind goop that it's hard to stay focused on the deeper meaning of things and to get something done in your world, because you're slogging through this fluff. And it's like you got to deal with the fact that, you know, Lindsay Lohan got one day in jail after driving drunk with her band around her ankle and coke in the car. She gets one day in jail and 3 years probation, right? If it was me, you, or Val,
we'd never see
our loved ones again.
We'd be singing Moon River.
Exactly. We would be doing a show called Naked Ow instead of Naked Toma. But the thing is, it's just like, you know, all the Michael Vick attention, too. It's like they've gone around. They've asked every living legend athlete what Charles Barkley weighs in tonight, and Hank Aaron weighs in tonight, and Tiger Woods weighs in tonight. Poor Michael Vick is now, it's almost like, if you think about it, nothing's changed since we had the stockade for the witches up there in
Salem.
In Salem. It's like we take whatever freak on a leash we have, you stick them in the middle of the public eye, and everyone gets a whack at them. And I just don't understand, what's the purpose? Yeah, the guy screwed up, but now he has to go on the apology tour. Then they have to have 500 panels. Was he genuine? Was it from the heart? Where will it go from here? Will he ever play again? Everything that you see out there is about exploiting what everyone else perceives to be a talent. Okay, Michael Vick, run fast, dodge people, give him a football, pay him money. Now, all of that stuff goes away, and all of a sudden, it's Michael Vick the person, which no one ever knew. No one knew they had this dark side, and he was running around. And if they did, it wasn't something that was even going to, like, kind of bump into the other world. And all of a sudden, you know, back in April, he had, I don't think of what it was, when he had to get caught with the water bottle in the airport and all that. He started seeing him kind of little cracks in the armor. But knowing that he's eco is the point that we're trying to make here at Naked Soma. Ecos follow the pathologic. They always step on their own toes. They always, basically, where's the line they're going to cross it? Because think of a teenager. You give a teenager rules and they know right from wrong. Don't they get all of their jollies breaking the rules?
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy who has been an elitist for most of his adult life, really. No one's ever called him on the call. But, you know, his brother was another head case. And meanwhile, you know, everyone that knew him, hey, nice guy, friendly guy, great teammate, but they like to do this thing with the dogs. And they all this posse around him, with whole crew around him from whatever the heck he was over there in Virginia. And it was he was the financier. He had the crib and all that. But the thing is that because it was dogs, and because it was something that was looked at as being over the line, everybody gets to pass judgment on the guy. Meanwhile, the guy, what, was Lance Briggs on the Bears? He wraps his car around a pole the other day and just takes off in the scene of the crime. It's like, well, I'm okay, but the car's not. Back to football. It's like it. These guys beat their wives. They're all. The half of them have records. The NFL is not, the Tabernacle Choir, you guys. You know. So that's why it's just so funny how it's almost like the way Barry Bonds became the poster boy for steroids for everyone that ever did steroids in baseball. Now Michael Vick's going to be. Michael Vick just took Pac-Man Jones off the back page. You know, Pac-Man Jones was public enemy number one for about a week. There's a guy laying in a hospital in Las Vegas who's paralyzed for life because of Pac-Man Jones' little adventures over the summer,
mm-hmm.
but nobody's having panel discussions about that guy. Another eco from hell, but, you know, not getting down on the ecos, then that is eco week, but here we are.
Yep.
So, I don't know if Dr. Jeb has to take off yet, but I wanted to get a couple things across before we left. What we're going to be looking at, and we'll be talking about the rest of the show after he takes off, is the transition we're making. We just discussed four different Soma stars the last 4 weeks. I mean, you can go back and look on the blog and take a look at the people we profiled. And then before that, we were sort of looking at a different signature for each domain as we went throughout the week. And we do the Soma scopes toward the top of the hour to give you kind of an idea of how to apply this this work. And if you haven't heard of this stuff, you go to somaspace.org. It's all up there. And what we're transitioning to is to sort of give you guys sort of a self-directed protocol. And we're calling it emotional makeovers. And we're going to get into the infrastructure of that as we go and walk through the last 11 lunar phases that we went through. But I wanted to get Dr. Jeb's take on this because he's applied this stuff clinically and he's applied this stuff in his life and he's gotten some different reads on it because as a philo, it's going to hit his beach a little closer to the biological shore than it would for the rest of us. So out of all the things you've experienced, especially in the later stages of your wife's pregnancy, what's the one thing out of all the work that you've been able to kind of integrate that really stuck, that like, what is it? Is it the symbols? Is it the calendar? What is it, the one thing that's kind of hung on the door and said, okay, this is the thing that I can carry with me lightly without feeling like I have to remember it all the time?
You're reading my mind. Today I was working on a client, and then we were talking about the twins, and then for just a moment I had this this very vivid thought of Ava. And that, for those of you who don't know, I had a daughter a couple of years ago who had a chromosomal abnormality, and she was really wasn't compatible with life. And we had her for 9 days, nine wonderful days, and she passed away. And one of those days I was holding her, and she went totally blue and, you know, wasn't breathing, and I thought, oh, this is it, you know, she's dying in my arms. And I reach my head down to listen to her heart, and she goes, and starts breathing again. And, you know, so on one hand, I was scared shitless, startled, mm-hmm. you know. And then I was in this really super emotional space, and then Nora and I start laughing. Like, we're crying and laughing because there was this humorous side to it. Now, the reason I tell the story like that is because it's pretty penetrating. I mean, that stuff doesn't go away quickly. And one of the things that we talk about in Universal Somatics is that this stuff is all a story. And I was like, okay, you're right, Mark, that's a story. But you know what? That story grabs me. And so today I thought about that moment because it just came up. And I got that. My feelings became physical. I started to get sweaty, and I started to get that pit in my stomach, and I got a little bit, you know, cold, clammy feeling, and almost like was going to start lumping my throat. And then I just exoed on it. I totally went exo because I at the same time I said, okay, so that's an experience. That was a feeling. That's real, and it was traumatic as heck. But at the same time, if this stuff works, if this stuff has If the work that we're doing has meaning and can change people's lives, then how does it work? And instead of, I didn't think like, oh, am I going to exo, but I just did. In other words, I backed off and looked at the whole thing objectively. I said, okay, I was upset. Then I laughed and I cried and Luke was there and he was upset. But when I sort of put it all there, and I think how you've talked about it in the past is that when you do that, when you exo it, it goes onto the grid, like onto the Excel spreadsheet. And then it all went into my cortex, the part of the brain that sort of, that's the higher part of the brain. So it became less embedded deeply in me as an emotion that was tearing me apart, and more a file that I could look at objectively and not be so attached. So for me, I think, and I don't know if that, I don't think that really would be called profiling, but it was using just the four domains. I didn't, it really wasn't going into the transition states or any of the deeper stuff. It was just saying, mm-hmm. when that happens, if I do this, then I can cope. And I know that as we talk more and more about this in the emotional makeover with, mm-hmm. with you folks, that we'll get into that stuff into what I was actually doing there. But that was really cool. And actually, I talked to the client who was there about it later. It was another client. I told her about it. And we were sort of, you know, she and I were just riffing on it about how she calls it in her life, because she's a bookkeeper, but she's Philo, and she's a really interesting lady. And she goes, when I get into those emotional times, I call it going into my business mode. So she has to exo at work because she's a bookkeeper, but she's Philo as hell. So it was very interesting, and it's exactly what you're asking me. So yes, I do use it every single day, and I use it with clients a little bit more. I use a lot of the breath work and sort of bringing them when I'm doing deep relaxation and bringing them from emotional states to a more coherent place when they're really having a hard time if they've had an emotional trauma or upset. And I do use profiling on a simple way with them. But for me, it was simply that, and it was very clear today. So a well-timed question.
Yeah, well, that's great, because that really gives it what I would call kind of a personal feel to it, because a lot of this stuff is just procedural stuff. It's breathe, move, feel, that kind of stuff. But when you get into the nuts and bolts of it, this is about really taking your subjectivity to heart. Most people just assume or take for granted that they're experiencing their life, and they think their life is, you know, very common. And actually, there's a lot of uniqueness to what you just said, even within the Philo community, because of your secondary domains compared to somebody else's. So what you would do in there, in case, you know, you want to kind of footnote it, there's a process called active witnessing versus passive witnessing. And when you actively shift your attention to the other domain like you did, which means you've had experience to know what it's like to be in that perspective, it's sort of part of metacommunication, to know that you know. It's like you're aware that you're looking at things from a certain vantage point. In NLP, they discuss it that you go from a meta point of view where you can see yourself. And at that point, you get exo. You get outside your normal way of operating, and you could sort of take your emotions down a peg because you're not going to get the physical sensations from the exo perspective that you would from the Philo. And just in NLP parlance, you shift it from a kinesthetic state, a body state, to more of a visual state, and you can't get hurt by what you can't feel what you see, so to speak. So you sort of separated your body from time at that point. So that's called active witnessing, and that means that you're using your capacity to consciously override the things you're feeling in your body and get to another perspective inside of those four-second windows we talk about all the time, that your brain is pinging these surroundings to figure out how to orient itself. And you found the one of the four domains that are the most coherent at that point. And once you understand, there's always one of them that has it. And the XO one is always the one that's going to give you a better plan, a better system, a better tool, a better resource. That's what it's there. It's sort of like this existential tool shelf that you can go to and say, okay, what do I need for this? And it'll provide you with things that are oriented towards the cosmic overview rather than just trying to micromanage the situation. So a lot of times, just knowing that you're doing that is enough, not necessarily what you actually do. Just knowing you have the capacity to shift your point of view. Most people get stuck in that one point of view and they get hammered in there, and you are able to pilot out of it. So that's a lot of this stuff is about being able to navigate and shift your focus in the moment and then be able to develop that capacity over time. So that's a great way of illustrating that to the listeners getting used to it, because like I said, you know, it's a gossipy world, and there's a lot of backbiting going on. There's a lot of people take things personally, and we're really talking about that moment when you're going along, and like you said, and you get that the breath goes away, and you feel the sweaty come up. What do you do then? See, if you don't have a plan, or at least have an awareness that there's a way to get out of that, you just go through the upset, you get flooded a lot, and then your willingness to change and your capacity to endure the process of change becomes unimaginable, and that's why, what's the stat, like 90% against you to make these changes after
right,
the age of 30.
Next thing you know, you're flipping cornflakes, doing the curly shuffle on the floor, you know?
That's it. It's off the Fight Club. Yeah. It's becoming almost... rehab is becoming sort of another community. It's almost like it used to be, where are you going on vacation? Or where are you going to rehab this year? So it's like everybody's in there. That what's her name? Amy Winehouse? You know, they're having like interventions on the web for her now. She won't go to rehab.
Oh, right. And, yeah.
She's another eco from hell, and she's like crashing cars and everything else. And her family's trying to like rein her in. It's like, so people think rehab is like the end-all be-all. It's like a way to be born again. All rehab does is take you off the streets for 28 days so they can somewhat stop you from being a bull in a china shop and stop hurting everybody. And then they send you right back out there. So it's a turnstile. And what are the rates for recovery, like 20%?
Yeah.
People actually will stay sober if they go through a 28-day rehab. So it's sort of it's a false god. And then you're in recovery for the rest of your life, and the strategy is to go to meetings every day. So, you know, I think we've evolved to the point now where we understand what it is to go through transition, that all they're doing is sitting there at that fifth interface where all the crisis is, where all the relationships happen, and they're trying to get you to go to the sixth one where recovery takes place and you get a new status quo, but they're not giving you any tools to raise your level of clarity. So your coherence stays the same. You go right back into your old patterns, and it's like, you know, the moon works against you at that point. The 80-20 works against you at that point. You don't get any leverage. You just get more labels, which is really what we're trying to steer people out of. So, All right,
man. And,
take it easy.
Girl.
Yep, have a good weekend. And,
bye, Jeb.
We'll pile out the fish from here, and we'll have a good Labor Day weekend. We'll see you back here next Wednesday night.
Yeah, let us know what's
Thank
going
you
on,
very
will
much,
you?
And hopefully we'll have two new babies on the ground next week.
That'd be great.
Is it 40 weeks next week, finally? What's it?
40
what's
weeks on Sunday.
Wow.
40 weeks on Sunday.
We are so close.
All right. Well, best to everybody up there in the wine country.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, be safe.
Take it easy. All right, finally, to tend to the fam.
Yeah, any minute now, too. Jeez.
We got to send Johnny Bench up there to get the catcher's mitt out.
These kids have been
riding the, they're staying right to the last notice here, 40 weeks.
They really are, and they're big.
Well, my daughter was 11 days late, actually.
Actually, yes. I was actually also.
You were late? I was 3 weeks early, because I knew I was going to be late the rest of my life. So
Yeah.
3 weeks head start, and I'm still late.
I can vouch for that.
And my son was 8 weeks early, if you imagine that.
He was in a
monstrosity.
Hurry.
Yeah, well, he's not in a hurry now, but
no.
He went to the beach today and came back and was making sounds like you hear out of a seashell.
Really?
So I said, where'd you go today, Kyle? And because my son, if you haven't heard the story, he's got a paralyzed vocal cord, so his voice is impaired. So he's 12 years old. So he comes back from the beach. Where'd you go today, Kyle? And he went...
That's great.
Okay. At the beach. Okay, gotcha. And he was fascinated with the ocean, the whole ocean thing, up and down. Because he's seen the ocean from a couple of different angles now, California and down in Florida and here. And so I think he's starting to get the idea that the beach is a place for him.
Yeah.
And I, this is something I would challenge a lot of people who have self-profiled over there at somaspace.org. If you profile yourself as EXO, the EXOs love the frickin' beach. I don't know what it is about EXOs, they have this sort of, I'm like they own it. When you see an EXO at the beach, it's almost like they're saying, look, this is Earth's property. And they have this, they're the ones walking around with the metal detectors a lot on the beach, you know, patrolling. The sort of surrogate lifeguards. They're just, watch it, they're running over there.
Jeez.
There was so many of them on patrol. When I used to go to Point Lookout, not knowing they were EXOs at the point, it's like, who are these people? They're like extended family members. No body surfing on the riptides. They're always so they had this very sort of authoritative feeler. They were the spokesman for the ocean. Watch out for those jellyfish, young man. You know, that kind of a thing. just very kind of regal about it. And I don't notice that in other venues. Like, you never see an EXO hanging out near a mountain. They're just not there.
Huh.
But you find them combing the beach, you know, just kind of making sure everybody's safe. I don't know what it is.
It's interesting. Well, my EXO likes the mountains.
He does?
Yeah, he does. He wants to go to the Blue Ridge. He doesn't ride motorcycle anymore, but he wants to drive it.
The Blue Ridge?
Yeah.
Way
down
in
Arkansas? No, they're on the way to Georgia. I forget where the heck they are. They're in
Georgia. There's mountains in Georgia?
No, on the way down there.
What? Like Virginia somewhere? If you know where the Blue Ridge Mountains are, our number is 644.
Close to in that area.
4847. You can always go to SoMuchSpace.org and go into the AIM chat room and just fill in the blank, or someone just Google the damn thing and tell us where it is.
Well, I could Google it. I'm sitting in front of the computer.
Google yourself. We got to get to this stuff here. God.
Hey, Vey.
You know,
Blue Ridge.
Corky Miller's up at the Bases Loaded again if you haven't.
I don't even want to know.
Corky Miller. He looks like a Corky.
Gosh. All right. Is it Georgia? Blue Ridge Mountain, Blue Ridge Parkway.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
It's in Georgia.
Yeah. Eastern United States, North Carolina. North Carolina.
We just had a chime in. They're in Virginia, the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yeah, well, this is North Carolina, so I don't know what the heck.
Well, I guess they go through North Carolina. The mountains just stop at the state line.
That's right. They stop because they have to pay a toll. And they said, I'm sorry, I'm not going.
Mountains pay taxes, yeah. All right, so let's see. Let's go back through. We get to the blog page. I have about 11 things open here. All right, so going back through the weeks of the summer now, we started off with the advent of the phone there. I'll just do it this way. This is easier. I'm talking to myself before.
Well, this is Eco. You hear us talking to ourselves? Eco.
Yeah, we're including you, but, you know. So way back at the beginning of the summer, we were talking about some of the things. We started off, actually.
Actually.
Just after the end of The Sopranos, we started our summer thing, and the first thing we talked about was the advent of this iPhone, which, of course, there was a kid in Jersey that cracked the code of it last week. And it was this relationship with technology that we were trying to get, that this is where EXOs come from. If you look at your world right now, how many technological devices do you have that are communication-oriented? And we were saying, you know, the summer is a time for expression, and this is a time to prepare yourself. Back in June, we were still technically in the spring, and we went through that signature. So we talked about exopotting and a little fun with that. So as we went through the rest of the preparation time, we got into the Philo IQ. We were talking about, I'm going to play the clip here in a sec because I just can't resist it. Hang on a sec. Oh, my God, it's no longer available. How about that?
Nice.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
That's the nature
mm-hmm.
of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you've seen the caveman commercials for Geico and things like that, making mm-hmm. fun of that sort of the Philo IQ, the dumbing down of America, and a lot of the things that go on dealing with intellect versus instinct. And the Philos have a really good relationship with their instincts. They trust their instincts because that's all they really can rely on at that stage of development, going through it chronologically. As adults, see, this is the thing I want to get across. If you don't know what the four domains are, I'm going to be talking a little gibberish to you here, but if you understand what the four of them are, if you listen to the show, it'll be a little bit more kind of, okay, this is what I wanted to know. When you think of anything in terms of the way you developed over time, going across day by day chronologically, it things came in layers, right? You got this, then you got that, then you could walk, then you could ride a bike, then you went to school, you know, then you drove a car, things like that, right? Everything kind of came in sequence. But once you become an adult, things don't go in sequence anymore. Mm-hmm. They go in priority order. So you get up in the morning and you've got your to-do list, and you keep going from 1 to 2 and back to 1, and 1 to 2 and back to 1. Maybe you get to 3 or 4 and then back to 1. So it's always up and down, this sort of vertical way of thinking. And those two worlds, the horizontal world of time and the vertical world of priority, is really the way your brain has to sort of design its orientations all the time, because it's getting conflicting information coming at it essentially perpendicular to itself. So what we do in Universal Semantics is give you a way to orient yourself to sort of spiral around those two orientations and say which one of these is working for you best at this point in your day. So there's some of the things, that the skills we teach, they're all about being able to clear yourself in the moment, which is more about this vertical thing. And those are moments of decision. How many decisions did you make in a given day that you don't even have to have a committee meeting over? You know, which hand are you going to open the door with, or you know, which hand are you going to scratch your butt with? All those things are done in those vertical planes. It's a priority. And then you start thinking about organization, and you start thinking, how am I going to set it up for next time? And that's why a lot of the stuff we do in being able to coach people in this work is to get them to notice a situation as distinct from a circumstance, and a circumstance distinct from a scenario, so that you start thinking about things in terms of this time, next time, and then what are you going to do in the meantime? So you have your two dots. Here's the first time this person pissed you off, and here's the next time this person's going to piss you off. What are you going to do in the meantime to organize yourself so that when that pothole comes, you're able to absorb the shock or go around it? And that's what really what we're going to try to get into as we shift into talking about what's something we're calling an emotional makeover.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing as we have a resident psychology teacher here in the offing.
Lucky
why
you.
Why don't you give us, lucky me. I sound like I'm saying. Why don't you give us, we got to the final IQ stage here that second week of the summer, and, you know, we went through a couple more signatures. We talked about intuition, which is another thing that all you're shifting from when you go through these four domains is from that vertical way and that horizontal way of thinking. And the eco way of thinking is sort of on an angle, so they don't take either one. They kind of take both. And the exo way of thinking takes in all of it, and then sort of goes through the z-axis and goes into more of a depth of it. So it's a geometry of thought, even though somatics isn't about thinking. It's about actions and feelings. So what, you know, going through the list here, just to kind of sum up, we went through intuition there right around the end of June, and then in July we went through some more signatures of these things. As I scroll down. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, and we went through like eco-vacation, which is basically when you're talking about how do you spend your energy. Most ecos spend their energy through discharge. So they'll work through a lot of effort, and then they'll crash. And so you'll see a lot of that happening over the summer months. It's like all these behaviors have a biological kind of foundation to them. That's what we went through pretty much through the end of July. We went through the eco-vacation, where they just kind of dip out and don't tune into you. And then we went through Exogenius with a little George Carlin in there, if you listen to that show.
Yeah, that was
and
fun.
And we got into those. Yeah, that was a fun show. That was the one where the thing wouldn't shut off and Jeb wouldn't...
How funny. It was. We were crying. We were laughing.
Yeah, if you want some last playback that show. And the thing is that you start noticing personalities have much more going for them underneath the descriptions that are common to all of us. We have, there's a little piece of that in all of us. We just don't have that up on the surface as our primary way of communicating. So then after the George Carlin show, then we switch to the next domain. Let's see if I can scroll up here. Because, of course, it sticks.
Yeah, some of them also aren't there anymore, which is sad.
Yeah, well, you know, YouTube is becoming sort of like, you know, a little bit of a police state. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we got into Save the Philo Turtles. Remember that? And we were talking about the animalistic aspects of being a philo and things that we're dealing with, the way the philo will protect itself with Michael Moore's Sicko movie.
Mm.
That was a big movie this summer, if you didn't see it. That's another one again, there's a lot of good social programming going on out there, but it's sort of under the radar. So Michael Moore's movie is an example of that. And then back on the 23rd of July, that week we blogged about ontoalchemy. So a little distinction from ontuition is ontoalchemy. Did you ever notice that there's certain people, whatever they say, is law? And if you want to learn about that, you take a look at what we posted that week. And then I think, if I can scroll up against the wind here, yes, then we got into the Soma Stars. And so we said, okay, we've given you one slice a week for, you know, a good 6 or 7 weeks, and now let's take a look at how this becomes a composite in a human being. How does a human being take all this information? And we went around the horn, and we started with our friend there, Tim Ferriss, and
mm-hmm.
we looked at the way an eco would align with his secondary domains and function in the world and thrive in the world. And we then transitioned to talking about the complete opposite the next week with Ken Wilber, who's an exo, an analytical guy, an intellectual guy. And how did he become a bonding type? How did he become someone who could deal with emotions and things like that? Because it's not something that he has in his core. He had to go acquire it. And then we went way over to the other side of the rainbow. We're talking about from Ken Wilber to Michael Port, who's, you know, as viral as a bunny on your front lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And how did he become exo-fied and become popular on the Internet? And then finally, last week, we talked about our old pal there, Leonto, Peter Gaskew, with his wonderful radio show, barking at the old ladies out there in the Southwest, and getting them physically fit again. And so all of these people had, you know, a common purpose to express themselves, and they could not just do it with their primary domain, the one that travels with you pretty much in the front of the bus from birth to age 25. They had to develop a social brain that was able to communicate better with itself and better with other brains, and then they became much more transferable and more able to access their open identity. So that's what we got into over the summer. Now we want to take that whole foundation, all the stuff that's gone on in society, all the Lindsay Lohan stories, all the Britney Spears stories, put them in the toy chest and stop riffing on this, put that down, and next week we're going to pick up something that's a really kind of a core element of this work. It's called the emotional makeover. So since we have, as I said 5 minutes ago, a resident psychologist in the room, I want to get the traditional way that the mainstream conventional psychology types deal with emotional problems.
Mm. Not so
and
good.
And what is their track record?
Mm.
Not that we're going to slam them, put them at times in a post like one of Michael Vick's dogs, but I just want to know, what are they up to?
Well, you know, you walk into a therapist's office and they're always going to say first, so what brings you here? You know, the first day, what brings you here?
My God.
Yeah. And usually whatever it is that the person says is not really why they're there. Like, for example, somebody may come in and say, you know, I've been really unhappy with my weight lately, and I'm just not concentrating, and I'm not focused, and I'm not doing the things I have to do to get it off. And then as you're talking to them, third or fourth session in, you find out, you know, I got mother problems, I got uncle problems, I got kid problems, you know, dog's driving me crazy, and there's all this other stuff underneath. So by the time you actually find out where the problem is, they've probably spent $1,000 coming to your office.
To just basically just tell you what's going on, like they're a cub reporter.
You know, and
these are the
yeah.
events, these are the circumstances, this is my issue, now what?
You know, and then, like, I have a couple of clients when they come in, they tell me the same effing thing every week, same thing, never change, and, you know, it almost makes you feel guilty to take the fee. Because they're not doing anything, no matter what you say to them, okay, how about this week, giving them some goals, they don't do it. They come back the next week with the same story. Makes me nuts.
So make a distinction, because I'm an old retired Catholic. What is the fundamental difference between doing that and going to confession?
I guess I don't give them any Hail Marys to say on the way out. That would probably be about it.
There might be some you know, pills, potions, lotions, or creams to apply, but, oh, my God.
Are you watching the game? Oh, stop. Don't
I
look.
Just, no, they didn't score.
It's okay. It's 2-2. We're good. All right.
Loaded nobody out.
That's okay. Right. Just, speaking of emotion.
The eco is screwing it up, as usual.
No, don't worry about it. So that's pretty much, you know, it's a long process to even find out what's really eating the person. And
mm-hmm.
you're not taught to be very direct with psychology, and it's, and how does that make you feel? And you know what? I already know how it makes them feel. I don't have to ask that. Your mother died, and how does that make you feel? What do you think?
But what's the plan once they've externalized all these things and pulled all these splinters out of themselves? Are they going to go right back into the marsh? I mean, how do they, like, think of a show like Sopranos. We started off this summer talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And what I'm interested in is, it's like what the therapist learned, which is really to me what the show was about, was what Dr. Melfi learned.
Right.
Was that you can't help everybody. And
no.
She sincerely wanted to apply psychotherapy to help this sociopath somewhat get some balance in his life and maybe stop him from a life of crime.
Right.
And over what, 7 years, I guess, the show took, you know, was supposed to transpire over, he got worse. And then her therapist told her that, you know, for sociopaths, therapy is another criminal operation. They're actually learning to refine
mm-hmm.
their empathic skills.
Yep.
And get more sympathy from people so that they can go and do their sociopathic stuff. And one of the shows you're looking at that look as it uses the fodder for the fall is Showtime's Dexter show, which maybe we'll talk about here on Emotional Makeup.
Oh, that is the best.
That would be good. Is that when you're dealing with feelings, and you're looking at them through the exo lens, that third-person lens where there's no physical target, there's just data, it's easy to be impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to be removed from the affect of it. And so it seems like what therapy's trying to do is to get you to get in your head and get sort of to the left side of your brain and get more kind of make sense of what doesn't make sense by talking about it, and then do nothing with the rest of yourself that has to suffer with the memory of it. So it, as we know, things work in cycles. It's going to come up again. Like, what are you going to do the next time your mother verbally abuses you? What are you going to do the next time your boss insults you?
Right.
There seems to be no end unless you remove all the other people in that person's life and stick them in isolation or drug them to the point where they can't even notice they're there.
It takes too long, and it's not complete. There's a lot of holes. And
nothing's perfect. I'm just saying that they've had, you know, psychology split off from medicine, you know, about 100 years ago, and said we're going to do it different. And they, of course, it's psychiatry. But
right, and it all started off as philosophy, so it started there.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
It started with philosophy, then it went to psychology. So it, you know.
Okay, well, make the bridge for me. What's the distinction between philosophy and psychology?
A lot of the first philosophers, because I can't talk tonight, philosophers
mm-hmm.
really started the ball rolling towards psychology because psychology just didn't exist. It was, you know, everyone was a philosopher, and then it kind of melded into its own thing. It became, you know, about the psyche and about feelings later on and all of this other stuff, and then, you know, psychiatry comes in later, because that's really a very new science. It's hit or miss. It still is. I mean, yeah, we can label people with the DSM, but how do we treat them? Try this medication. Let's see how it works. Then we have to bump it up, and then change it to something else and the dose. And it's trial and error. There's nothing more than that.
What are you trying to manage? Are you trying to make the person so they can't experience any negativity the rest of their life?
Well,
is there some kind of inoculation through therapy and drugs that they'll never have another negative experience?
That's the problem.
It's a cracked egg philosophy. We're all broken, and we all need to be fixed.
Yeah, well, I think that what you've said and what I think is the best thing so far is that you have to learn how to play hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And
most people don't want to experience any pain. I understand that pain is not my friend, but it is a messenger. And sometimes it's knock on the door to say, you got to change. You got to change the way you behave. You got to change the way you act towards other people, or this abuse will go on forever.
Right, and one of the problems with, like, for example, if you go to a doctor and they give you Prozac because there are really crappy things going on in your life, well, that's a situational depression, okay?
Yeah, that's a this time thing.
And
the parachute and you get out of it. Yeah,
that's not really what you need to do, because what ends up happening is that you will stay in the bed situation longer because it's not bothering you as much because you're a little numb to it, and that's really not a good use of a person's time. I mean, how much?
I got a quote on the wall here that I point to a lot because I'm tired of saying it. Is the effects of self-conflicted ways of living return as long as we continue to live as we have?
Right.
Most people don't get that. They think that the situation made me angry, or the circumstances were beyond my control. I love that excuse.
Right.
And the healthier the excuse, the sicker the person. Because, you know, the more plausible the story did not change, the more likely you are going to stay where you are.
Right. And now, don't get me wrong. If there's a serious chemical depression and somebody's on there, they just can't even function. That's a lot different than a situational depression. So I don't want to
I think a lot of these things are not so much that they're self-organized, but people get in them and they don't get out of them because they don't have any resources to get out of them. And sure, someone gets hit by a bus or something like that, or they're in some dire circumstance, you're not going to expect them to just snap out of it.
Right.
And it's like, that's what the other thing is. People want instant relief all the time. They don't want to do the work of recovery. Like, if your target was to drive from here to Detroit, and you got in your car and you looked out 17 hours later and you were somewhere like in Georgia, you're way off track. You're not going to expect, if you got good directions from there to get back to Detroit, to be there in 5 minutes.
Right.
But people expect when they've lived this way for 25, 30 years, they're going to, in 2 days, they're going to
It doesn't work that way. See, that's what I'm saying, that horizontal versus the vertical. You make a decision in the vertical plane to reorient yourself, and then you walk through time with that, no different than you would with any other resource or any other type, if it's an exercise program or a diet. But everyone wants the instant fix without a lot of pain, without a lot of
right.
of kind of speed bumps. And there's a price for reentry, and it should be something that people welcome, but they tend to not want to experience it because they can't shift their orientation. And that's really what somatics offers you, is to say there's three other orientations, three other channels of awareness that you have inside you. And that's what the Emotional Makeover teaches you over the course of one lunar cycle. It's about 30 days long, is how to get yourself to open up. Not like a can opener, not like someone trying to rip you out of your shell, but to systemically go through the process and teach you, notice this, notice this, notice this, every
right.
day different.
Right.
And to give you that sense of ownership of it, because it is your unique world and you're trying to govern.
Well, that's
and
the other problem.
And if you don't do that, then what's that?
That's the other problem with traditional therapy. People come in the office and they do the same thing to you. They say, fix me. And even
fix
when
me.
You give them homework, you know, or something that they need to do or some goals to accomplish by the next week, they don't do it, and they come back in, and then they just tell you the same story over again, where the Emotional Makeover is giving you information, it's teaching you, it's giving you tools, and it's hands-on. And, you know, we're here to assist, but you're going to take your life back over again, and you're going to step back into your power and deal with your stuff.
Well, one of the little business terms I picked up was called JND, Just Noticeable Difference. And what I'm really trying to do as a practitioner or as a consultant or as anything that could be a, you know, an assistance in someone's life, is to give them that just noticeable difference, to raise their level of performance, just that one hair, so they say, I can actually get past the point of what my usual customary way of behaving is, and I can make a distinction today. And the sort of the carrot and the stick is all about self-improvement and always about moving up instead of moving inward. And if you don't move inward, you don't destroy the old pattern. You just add new ones on top, and you result with a lot of icing and no cake. So it becomes like a sugar high, and
mm-hmm.
you go, woo, you know, I got my high, and then you crash back down again. So it doesn't stick. And that's what I'm saying. You can make a lot of changes in the moment, but can you carry them over time is the question.
Right.
And that's really what people have to start to understand if they're going to make the second half of their lives, or even from 30 on, something that they can enjoy rather than something they have to endure. And that's
mm-hmm.
really what we're trying to do with the show, and that's what we're going to be discussing every week. We're going to give you little tips, little strategies to begin your emotional makeover. We can diffuse some of the knots in your world here every week on Wednesday nights, and then our program is going to be there available to you so you can work with it on a self-directed way over the course of 30 days and really learn what you're made of, because a lot of times people do it in a vacuum. And I have people tell me they can't do that because that's not their ethnic background, or they can't do that because they're a woman, or they can't do that because they didn't get the right breaks in life. All of those stories are there as sort of mental furniture for you to trip over in the sort of the attic of your mind, where they have no relevance to you making any lasting permanent change. Yes, they're there. Yes, they're cumbersome. Yes, they're absolutely just thorns in your side. And like we said before, playing hurt and being able to understand that you have to perform in the valley to perform in the peak. You ride the whole wave, not just the peaks. And you get out of the sugarfied model that, as you see it, you say psychology is this long longitudinal line that goes on and on and on and hardly ever changes. And then you have parallel to that, you have all these little dots off to the side, these little cottage industries, these little weekend seminars, that get everybody stoned and high and wasted on their own endorphins, and then return to their regularly scheduled, you know,
and
happy
that's
lives
that.
On Monday or Tuesday.
Yep, that's
yeah.
no good.
I mean, and that's what people do. They go to therapy during the week to sort of cope with the fact that they don't have what they want in life, and then they go on the weekend and they go to the little spa thing, the little new age little fix, the little transcendental thing, and they get wasted, literally wasted on their own brain chemistries. And they go back out in the world, they have their little epiphany, and then they go right back to the regular scheduled program because they haven't done anything to orient themselves on a full-scale basis. And that's what we're trying to do with the resources we have, and hopefully over the summer we gave you some examples of people that have actually done that, especially the four we profiled in August. So, all right, so we're getting close to the top of the hour.
Let me see here. Yeah, looking at my little timer here.
Sticking out here.
Yeah, we got 10 minutes. Not bad.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to offer some somascopes here in a minute and just get our bearings for next week. So we're going to meet the same time every week, you know, 8 to 9 on Wednesdays, and what we're going to be doing, the format's going to be much more about introducing different concepts from the audio program we're putting together that's called Your Somatic Companion, 30-Day Emotional Makeover. So you're going to learn how what you think is your emotional world is actually, it's not something that's coming from inside you, it's coming from the environment. And we're going to get into the neurobiology of it a little bit and get into some of the science around it on some of the other things we're going to do. But on the show, it's going to be about what's happening in you and how can we help you reorient yourself. So we really want to encourage you to call in and participate so we can start doing this stuff.
Yeah, give me a break,
a
people.
Yeah, give Val a break. Just
give me a break. God.
Yeah, and that way we could start actually getting some fun going here, because as you're going to realize as we go through call after call and start getting used to having people share with us like this, your world and my world are not that much different if you reduce it to the four domains, if you reduce it to the basic four orientations we're all designed to experience. And then if we have common domains and we have common ways of looking at things, even more overlap between my life and your life, and we start realizing that anger is not something that's just, got a Jones for me. Anger is something that's out there all the time, and it's there to have it has a purpose, it has a context to it. And if you start understanding the rhythm of these emotions and the way that these emotions course through your life and the way that your days are spent in and out of them, they start to become much more reliable instead of disruptive. And that's what we want emotions to be. It's not like we don't want you to have emotions. It's just we want you to have better ones and be able to understand them, what their purpose is, and not to shoot the messenger, so to speak, but maybe to shoot the interpreter once in a while in your head. So, all right, so that's sort of what I wanted to say about that. Now I'll get into some somascoping here. Did you see any of the clips from the lunar eclipse, Val?
No.
Oh, they were great. I left a link on the site, if you see it on the blog there.
I did see one picture. It looked like our logo.
The old Naked Soma logo.
Actually.
Well, it was a bloody lunar eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't sound right. But basically what we're introducing as we get into it, if you studied any of the stuff we pointed you to, we use an exercise program called Simples, which is really not exercise. It's really a way to refresh yourself and get your energy back and get yourself centered again so that you can exercise. But what it's doing is a process called entrainment. And if anyone's read anything about even just the earth science, really, they're aware that shifts of the moon affect the ocean tides, and it affects the way the emotions work through us energetically, too. It's coming from a lunar source. So we're all lunatics in that sense. And each phase of the moon is delivering us a different domain of awareness for that entire phase, so that it actually programs the way we're supposed to be dreaming, with the ways we're supposed to having different parts of our frontal lobe lighting up, and so different parts of the month we're working on self-healing or foresight or things like that. So we're going to get into that. Hopefully we'll get to interview some guys like Dave Goodman. We'll get him up here to talk about, he's done about 35 years of dream research. I want to start talking about that topic, because underneath it all is something called positive physiology, which is completely different than the physiology you learned in biology class and high school and stuff like that, and even some of the stuff you've seen out there in the press, because almost everything that you see related to physiology that's out there is either related to one of two things, exercise or stress. And they don't understand, and they haven't been able to articulate the use stress, the positive physiology that comes from evolving and actually having a higher degree of integrity within the way your system coordinates itself within the world. So, what's physiology? It's what's wiggling in the world. What's your physiology? It's what's wiggling in you. So if the wiggles are waving together, you get this state of coherence. You get this clarity, and your life suddenly gets more understandable. It gets more manageable, and it gets more meaningful, because you lit up the scoreboard, and you get access to all of your resources. So that's what we want to be focusing on when we talk about emotions. Not that I got angry. Angry got you. And we're going to be going over how that happens during the course of the show. So turning our attention to somascopes as we enter into the final week of the somatic summer, which ends conveniently on Labor Day,
We're in the eco world, so we're not doing our simples this week. We're taking a rest, which is another thing that is big in this program, is that recovery is just as important as activity. There's always a side where you're going to be more active and then more passive. So there's a rhythm to it. There's a sensory experience and there's a motor experience. And coupling those two is what's important. So we're going to get into that. So here we are on Eco Week, which means we're all programmed more to be a bias towards more empathy. We're programmed more towards being more aware of other people's worlds more than ours. So we're going to be more into the environment than into ourselves. We're going to be much more prone to feelings that are deep-seated rather than ones that are superficial. So all those things, you can read about some of the things about the domains on the website again to get into it. But this particular week, since we're getting into the end of the summer here, is very important because we just finished coming through a horrible full moon a couple of days
man.
Ago. Just an onto week from just basically just flushing us all out.
Yep.
And so now we're in the recovery part. We just started the recovery part. It ends on Monday. And what you want to start doing is it's almost like at the end of spring, you do the spring cleaning and throw things out, is take a look from top to bottom, again, doing that vertical way of thinking, and use your onto resources and go through and take away the bottom five things on your top 10 list. You're not going to get them done. Dump them. Just, you know, it's like what Tim Ferriss talks about, go on a low information diet. Don't answer your email every 15 minutes. Don't, be so sort of bound by processes that are not feeding you and serving you anymore. Just trim the tree a little bit. And it's sort of like, you know, this is getting close to harvest moon next month, so you want to just start cutting away from the chaff a little bit and taking a look at the things you do in your life that are just robbing you of energy, robbing you of recovery time, robbing you of a stillness that you need. Because in order to get into that vertical awareness, you have to own the moment. When you own the moment, the stillness comes back to you. When you don't, then you got to keep moving, and even when you're tired, and then you're dragged by the world rather than being compelled by the world. So that's the thing that you want to remember this week. And, of course, out of all four domains, the people that have the primary domain in the exophase are going to be much more able to do this than the other three because they don't have to deal with as much baggage because they're not tuned into other people as much. They're tuned into their system, their process, their resources, their tools. So if you're hanging around an exo this week, it's like a NASCAR. You want to draft off the exos. You want to let them be the lead car and say, you know, just like Dr. Jeb was talking about, shifting to that perspective and being able to not get stuck into the emotions, to just take the data in, almost like you're looking at life through one of those security cameras where you're not really in the room, you know, and you have that sort of position where you can see yourself and just examine your behaviors that way. If you've been doing the summer diary, take a look at that and see if that's been serving you. Just look at five or six things that have been supportive and sort of helping you get through the life and that you're living and say, what do I want to add, what do I want to subtract? Because it's sort of one of those types of weeks. So out of all the domains, the exos are going to be more able to handle that than the other three. The ontos are going to be sort of the last car over the bridge because their belief system was what gives them their source of coherence. So they have to look at the beliefs that are not serving them rather than the things that they're doing externally. So that's my SomaScope for the week. And we got just enough time for Val to do a quote, and we will tie a bow and riff on this.
All righty then. Oh, I have a couple here. I don't know which one to do. How about this one? The strangest and most fantastic fact about negative emotions is that people actually worship them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, that was a weird one. It's like, it's unfortunate but true.
But hey, emotions they're chemicals, they're drugs. So I can see where they would get worshipped. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're gonna bow out gracefully. And
yes.
Do you have our new song to play on the way out here?
Oh, I do.
Bruce?
If I can, let me get the. Yeah.
Right.
Here it is. Here it is. All right. Well, say your goodnights, Gracie.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening. And if you're listening back and you're out there archiving, we really need you to join us as we journey forward to the emotional makeover format next week. Watch the site for some changes, and definitely visit somaspace.org, and of course floatspouse.com. And we will see you again next Wednesday night at 8:00. So for Dr. Jeb and for Sal, I'm Dr. Mark. Travel light through the darkness.
Bye.